It's time for To The Last Drop podcast with Liam Del Calm and Brendan Nell.
This is To The Last Drop. I'm Liam Del Calm.
And I'm Brendan Nell.
Brendan, last weekend there were two cracking European finals. Certainly the one on Friday night was one that had great South African interest. I think the other one on Saturday had it made for a few vibrations around the world because it was a epic Champions Cup final. But before we sink our teeth into that, the Challenge Cup final provided us with a number of thrills.
Yeah, I must admit, I was very happy to watch on Friday night, very happy for the Sharks. Saw some suggestions afterwards that maybe they should remember that this is a second-tier competition. And in a way, it was like watching a boxing fight with the undercard, a very good undercard before the heavyweight title fight. But yeah, I mean, the Sharks, if you look at their history, they haven't won a significant trophy in the professional era, talking about other than Currie Cup and international competitions like Super Rugby. They've been the best team in Super Rugby never to have won it.
Four finals kind of says that, yeah. Doesn't it?
Yeah, and so for them, I can understand why they got so happy and why they sort of celebrated like it was winning the World Cup. Mm. Good on them. Let them enjoy that moment.
Mm. Yeah, I thought it was a thoroughly professional performance, competent. They were, there was a lot of coherence in their play. And, you know, it was a performance that was worthy of a final. I mean, apart from the first couple of minutes where they were on the try line defending and defending well, I have to say, they dominated that final. I mean, they put some points on the board and more than held Gloucester at arm's length. I mean, they looked quite comfortable.
But you could almost see it. I think we also got the idea in that first couple of minutes that, when they sort of repelled them from their try line after Gloucester started so well, you almost got that idea. That's the mindset. The mindset they won't pass and we will dominate. And just from then on, every single collision was dominated. Every scrum, there was only one winner. The funniest thing was watching that was the comical English commentary team. I don't know if you listen to them. Ben Kay.
Yes. I mean, it's as if they didn't do any homework.
Plus, it also felt like they were watching a very different game to us. It was almost as if Gloucester were doing everything right and the Sharks were just being lucky. And, as it went on, at one point at 36-10, they started saying, oh, well, the Sharks are doing pretty well. It just was bizarre watching it. We used to commentary teams and we comment every now and again about it, but commentary is not an easy game. And ex-players do sometimes show a bit of bias and talk about we. In that game, I think in the third minute, they started talking about we should do better and we this. And it's just ridiculous at times.
And to be fair, in the Champions Cup final the following day, it didn't get much better because you got a very strong sentiment of people willing Leinster on and to lose mistakes or potential mistakes. Sort of being highlighted, wasn't that knock on, or wasn't this that, whatever.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's not something new. We used to have this. At times, I felt it was very much on the Greg Martin, the Aussie commentators that were, so heavily pro-Australia at times. Those ones that we saw in the early days of Super Rugby, but it didn't detract at least. I actually quite enjoyed it because it made it a bit more enjoyable for me to see the Sharks win, even though apparently they were winning everywhere except in the commentary box. So,
yeah. I don't want to drift off script, Brendan, but thinking of Chris Handy now, I mean, did you have a more dummies than a millennials baby?
No, I must admit. All I remember, Chris Handy, the only thing I always is that go you good thing for Joe Roth and who was it, Matt Burke? So I'll leave it at that.
He also referred to somebody once. I think it might have been Stefan Terblanche. And they showed a replay of him scoring a try. I think it was Stefan Terblanche. And he called him, look at him, the mountain man from Swellendam. Now, where he plucked that from, heaven knows.
I suppose
we are digressing.
Yeah, the closest they have nowadays is Sean Maloney, but he's more on the seventh circuit than we hear him. So, but yeah, I mean, look, I don't mind a good commentator who's colourful. It adds to the game. I mean, I think the days of Bill McLaren are probably gone. We're not going to see that type of commentator much anymore. But yeah, back to the game. I mean, I just thought the Sharks set piece was exceptional. I thought Pepsi Buthelezi probably had one of his best games in the Sharks jersey. And yeah, it was almost like, I mean, that dummy he threw for his try was
look,
he
I mean,
sold it hook, line, and sinker to the defenders.
Yeah. I mean, I think Carreras, he was a good able there in that in the last line of defense. But I agree with you, Buthelezi was very good. I remember in the semi-final how Clement at halftime had bossed the Sharks, especially at the breakdown. And I thought how the experience of Clement, their backer in particular, how they were making the Sharks pay. But after halftime, they turned it around in that semi. And I think they pretty much, Vincent Tutuka and James Venter, they've turned that around and basically brought that same second half form into the final. I thought they were very good. And I suppose also it's an example of the tight five with, and obviously Springbok-Layden tight five, sort of leading the way and dragging these guys along. They're good on the Sharks. I mean, they were fantastic in that final.
I'm
immensely proud of.
Yeah, I agree. I think the other thing as well is Carreras, you talk about him, he was excellent at the high ball in the early stage of the game. But at some point, something went wrong, and that's when the Sharks' dominance really started to tell, because there was some point just after halftime where he started dropping three, four balls, and I think two of them led to Sharks' tries. And it just went all awry, and that pressure sort of tell was huge on them. So I think this is you can't stop the accolades. I know it's only the Challenge Cup, but given the Sharks' season and where they were, they'll know there's bigger things out there. They'll know there's bigger trophies to win. But for a team like them to bring home a trophy, good on them.
Yeah, and I mean, they've got a foot in the door now. They obviously want to win the Champions Cup, so at least they've got a foot in the door, and it gives them a springboard. And you can now argue whether they've turned the corner. I think that final certainly showed what potential there. No doubt about that.
Yeah, and we're going to get to this week's URC games, because there's a very spicy game in Durban, well, and in Cape Town this weekend. In fact, like, all across the board this weekend. But there was a little the matter of a game between two teams with nine stars in between them, now 10 after this, with one of them now having six to lose. I sort of watched the game again on Sunday. It was in the background. And I started watching it again and sort of watching where Toulouse actually sort of dominated. And their defense was exceptional. I know everyone talked about Jacques Nienaber but coming to the game. But one of the things I did pick up is if you look at it, Leinster actually dominated that game. All the stats, when you look at the stats.
If you look at the stats,
68% possession, and a Leinster team normally, with that sort of type of possession, normally runs away with the game. Their attack wasn't as good as we thought they would be. And they just didn't look on song. I thought Toulouse defense was good, but they weren't as good as we've seen them before. But they were exceptional in moments of that game. And it was nice. There's a bit of a slugfest at times as well.
Yeah, but I think that's the way they often play when they have a team that is just about their peers, that's kind of on par with them. They're quite happy to defend. They back their systems there. I thought the way they went about the breakdown, where they actually caused the kind of chaos Irish teams, some of the better Irish teams, what they do at the ruck, Toulouse was able to do to them. That certainly disrupted a lot of their rhythm. They obviously, Leinster play a game that's based on continuity, and they eventually wear you down by taking the ball through the phases. But, apart from the number of turnovers that Toulouse exacted at the breakdown, when Leinster had the ball, Jamison Gibson-Park was almost always on the back foot. He couldn't pull the strings the way he usually does. And so their game just, I felt, lacked rhythm, and they didn't, you know, as much as they had good field position, you just never got the impression they were going to score all the time, if you know what I mean. I mean, they would usually do that to other teams, but on Saturday, that Toulouse defense was outstanding. And it also feeds a little bit into a narrative that Stuart Barnes, the former England international, something that he wrote about, I think about a week and a half ago or so ago, where he spoke about the influence of Jacques Nienaber in the Leinster setup. Because Barnes made the point that Leinster kind of is searching for something extra. They've come close in a number of finals and semi-finals elsewhere in other competition. And they were looking for, you know, that little bit of extra, and they were looking for this in defense. And by bringing Jacques Nienaber in, that actually arrived at the cost of the attack, at the expense of the attack. And looking at that final, maybe he has a point.
I think there is probably some validity, and I think there's always going to be a bit of soul searching after you've lost a final. They've lost now three in a row, what, 4 in 6 years. So there's going to be a lot of pull clutching and fingers pointing at places. And I think Leo Cullen's probably going to come under some pressure as well. I look at it this way. In the quarterfinal, when they smashed La Rochelle in those first 20, it was the attack that sort of smashed them. In the semi-final against Northampton, was pretty much the same. Was the attack. They took the game away from Northampton. Eventually, Northampton came back in the latter parts of the game. But, you know, it was certainly the attack was at the forefront. The attack wasn't that good on Saturday. And that, part of that comes from the pressure that the defense puts on you, obviously. As you said, they play a lot around Gibson Park and Ross Byrne, and both of them didn't have great games. I mean, I think twice I saw how they slapped Gibson Park's arm sort of at a ruck, so he couldn't get his pass away properly. And, I mean, that's some skullduggery there that they get away with. And, you know, that sort of thing. But those are the things, the moments that change games. And then on the other side, you could also say you look at the performance of a certain I don't want to call him a maestro. I kind of cringe when I hear all these superlatives going around about
Anton. He's the world's best player, Brendan. You can say so.
Yeah, I mean, if I have to hear that one more time, I mean, don't get me wrong, he's a magnificent player, and he had an exceptional game in the final, which you want big players to have big games.
But you're talking about the little general now, aren't you?
Yeah, but I mean, when you've you and I in our careers, we both covered US Universities and Farid Dupria. We've covered some of the best players in the world. We've seen George Gregan up close. Justin Marshall, some of the really good players. He is definitely, in a French context, probably the best halfback we've seen in the Six Nations for a long time. And he is good. He's exceptionally good. He's heads and shoulders above other players in his team as well. But I don't know, when you start telling everybody, from the moment he touches the ball, he can't do anything wrong. And I know I'm being a bit of a killjoy here when I say this, because anybody who watched the game, he was by far the man of the match, and he those turnovers he did. But I kind of enjoyed when Dan Sheehan pickpocketed him there and ran 70 meters. But then again, the guy who made the turnover, you've got to give him his credit. But I think the problem with that is every time he touches the ball, we just keep on hearing best player in the world, best player in the world. Yeah, and he's bloody good, don't get me wrong. But yeah, I get a bit tired of hearing that as well.
Mm-hmm. Look, to be fair, a lot of the action revolves around Monsieur Dupont. So and he was exceptional again. They've got their sixth star. And you know, if you take him out of the Toulouse equation, they'll still be a good side, but they won't be as good. I think they got a deserving sixth star. And it's probably time for us to move on.
Just before we do, Liam, I'm just going to stick on one point and just get your opinion on this, because it's something I've been thinking about a lot the whole weekend. Is obviously it's great that the Sharks have made the breakthrough in the Challenge Cup. But looking ahead now, we want South African teams to do well in the Champions Cup. And there is an outside chance that we could have four teams in the Champions Cup next season. Possibility of three is a lot more likely, but the Lions do have an outside chance of making it. We'll get to all those permutations down now. But in terms of how you approach the European Cup or the Champions Cup, it's no longer the European Cup. I must keep on saying it. It rolls off the tongue so easily because we're used to it. But in terms of approaching it like that, you've got to sort of think to yourself, how do they become successful to match a team like Toulouse, La Rochelle, Leinster? Leinster have shown they've struggled to play on both competitions. And often we've seen, especially with the French teams and other teams, that when they're not doing well in the one competition, they sort of just shut up shop and they concentrate on the other competition, which is obviously almost what the Sharks have did in the Challenge Cup. But going ahead, there's two different approaches now. The Sharks have gone for the Galacticos approach. They try to sign everybody in their brother, literally, in the Chichukas case. While the Bulls and the Stormers have followed a very different approach. The Lions obviously don't have the same budgets that the other two teams have, but yeah, the Stormers have got a good base of young talent coming through, and they've tried to bring back one or two older players, J.D. Schickling, who's coming back now, that sort of player. While the Bulls have obviously tried to sign a lot of these youngsters on long-term contracts, the Jan-Hendrik Wessels, Peter Gumede, Cameron Honeycomb, those type of players, and then bring back players like Akko van der Merwe, Kobus Wiese, who's joining them, Jannes Kirsten, to try and sort of prop that mixture of youth and experience. Now, long-term, I think for me, the Bulls and Stormers approach is probably better because I can see in sometime in 2026, 2027, those youngsters having over 100 caps, if they can keep them there, obviously, that's the proviso.
Well, that is the big thing, yeah.
Yeah, if they can keep them having over 100 caps and that team being a lot more settled and a lot more able to take on the big guns in Europe. But, one of the things that's never going to change is the travel factor, because you're going to have to go beat a Toulouse or La Rochelle somewhere in the competition or Leinster away from home. And if you can't do that, you're not going to win the Champions Cup. That's the way I see it. And even in a neutral venue, if they play in Cardiff or Tottenham Stadium, it's still away from home, a long way away from South Africa. So that's the other part. But yeah, in terms of the two ways of looking at it, I mean, the Sharks are looking for immediate success. And we've spoken to Marco Mazzotti on this show as well and about the way they're going about it. But the Bulls, which one do you think is going to be better in the next year or so? No, maybe not 27, 28, maybe say a bit more sort of next season or the season after.
Well, I suppose there's the ambition of the franchise. Then there's also maybe at times the ambition of the coach or the director of rugby. And sometimes you kind of have to marry the two. We spoke to Marco Mazzotti, and it's quite clear that the Sharks prefer, if you look at the current budget constraints on franchises, it's quite clear that they want the cap to be removed, that you can spend more on your squad. A team like the Lions, for instance, won't necessarily act for that. I mean, they try and live within a reasonable budget. So if you have to compare the Sharks and the Bulls, however, you'd have to say the Bulls one in the longer run is the better one. But then you need to hold on to players, not just, I know Jake spoke about this a couple of weeks ago, and that wasn't the first time he spoke about it, but the need to sort of build the next 3-4 years and get guys like Ulrich Lowe and Cameron Arnacombe to 50-plus caps or even close to 100. But then there becomes the need to still retain players beyond that. So even if they win a trophy, that you don't have a mass exodus at the same time, because then you start from scratch again. So there will have to be a lot of forward planning when it comes to player retention. I suppose we'll always have a trickle of players coming back, experienced players coming back from abroad. So you'll always have that. But even there, you need to be careful about who you go for. The caliber of play, your team profile, and so on. If I was to put money on it, I mean, the Sharks certainly have the firepower to, if you look at that squad, to potentially run a Toulouse and a La Rochelle close in the Champions Cup. But I agree with you when it comes to traveling there and winning on the road routinely, I'm not so sure.
Yeah, and part of the Sharks' big problem over the season has been the fact that they have, 12 Springboks, et cetera, so who aren't available in the current global season. And we've done that global season argument to death, and nobody seems to be listening at World Rugby. But the fact that they have so many Springboks is a problem for them, because their downfall has been the fact that their backup squad, or the guys who have to get them through the regular parts of the season, just aren't at the same quality and can't maintain the same sort of standard as when the Springboks are there.
To be fair, they have bolstered their ranks a little bit in that department, but whether they've done enough, I don't know.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I mean, so you can see the Sharks' sort of idea working if you're going to concentrate just on the Champions Cup. Because if you do it for those, 6 or 7 weekends or 8 weekends in the season, and you've got your best players there, and you can go full ball for that one, great. But then you've got to ask yourself, where do you sit in the ERC? It's a difficult one. It's going to be tough.
I was going to ask, do you think they're turning the ERC into a Currie Cup?
Well, no, I don't think that. I don't think we go that far just yet. But I think if you look at it, the problem that somebody like the Bulls have is that, let's take a Cameron Honeycomb. He's signed till 2027. But let's say tomorrow Toulouse want him, or a La Rochelle or Stade Francais, and they come with an offer that's 6 times his, and they're willing to buy him out of his contract and pay a transfer fee. That's the problem South African teams always going to have. You struggling against currency that's 20 times more worth of you earning here. And there's always going to be those sort of situations where a player is going to get a big money offer and want to go. But I think the thing is to create the environment and the success and use the advantages that South Africa has in terms of just our lifestyle and our weather and all these sort of things to try and keep players here. And that's a challenge for directors of rugby. And I think so far the Stormers and the Bulls are doing it pretty well. It's going to be interesting to see long term when those players hit 50 or 100 caps will become Springboks, become superstars, if they're going to be able to stave off the Wolves in that part of the system. But yeah, I mean, that's something we're going to have to watch. Yeah, we can talk about that probably for hours then, but it's something we're going to have to watch going ahead. But I suppose we should talk about a little final weekend in URC that's going to be quite spicy.
Yeah. Yeah, you used the word spicy earlier, and there is the Durban clash where the Bulls have to go to Kings Park and try and secure, if not second, well, if not first place, then potentially second. And I don't know quite what to make of the Sharks this weekend, because are they still in celebratory mood? Will they have the effervescence of the Sharks sort of still spur them on, or will they be flat?
Yeah, and I mean, what team are they going to pick? Are you going to pick all these guys to go for another round? And I mean,
you would think that they would want to go out of the URC with a bit of a bang and, you know, sort of put a performance in that their fans can be, you know, their fans can witness and that they can be proud of as well, especially on the back of winning the Challenge Cup, sort of ride that wave, as it were. And bring some of that joy home.
Well, you would expect that. And I mean, I think there will be the natural sort of extra spring in their step, so to speak, to use a cliche. But, facing a South African rival, and especially one that's higher than you on the log. So I expect them to probably go full ball. I mean, for the Bulls, I think either way, whatever team the Sharks put out, this is an exceptional good test for them. It's all one thing winning at home at altitude at Loftus against teams. Your test comes when you play away from home and how you can do that. And chances are the Bulls are going to have to still play away from home at least once in this competition if they go all the way. We obviously hope that might not happen. There's one caveat. I mean, if Ulster beat Munster, and we'll get to those predictions, but if Ulster beat Munster and Bulls win on against the Sharks and they finish top, then they'll be at home till the end of the competition. But Yeah, there's lots of buts and ifs and these things this weekend. So I think for the Bulls though, they've got momentum. They've racked up since that Munster game. They've racked up some big scores. They're playing with a lot of confidence. They've got a team, a pack that's playing well. The pack will be tested against the Sharks most definitely, and I'm quite looking forward to that the scrum battle between that Springbok front row and Wilco Lowe and Gerard Steenkamp, because that should be quite good. The Bulls have had a very good scrum this season, and then the back three who've shown exceptional form for the Bulls as well. I mean, those Springboks as well, and David Creel's been in great form. I think in terms of that, I can't wait for the clash, because if the Bulls want to be champions, they need to win games like this.
Yeah, it will be massively deflating if they were to lose in Durban. Because also you don't want that kind of defeat ahead of a quarterfinal, even if you're going to be hosting it the following week. Well, yeah, if you're going to be hosting a quarterfinal. So a lot on it for the Bulls, there's no doubt about that. But I really hope the Sharks pitch up and make it a proper spectacle. And I suppose also there'll be something in it for the Bok coaches. I mean, they will obviously know, who they want for the Wales test and for the series against Ireland. But it'll be good to see some of those big names measure up against each other. So yeah, that will be it's very much a clash to look forward to.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, that's the nice thing about going to give the URC credit. We can talk a lot about scheduling and travel and things like that. But I mean, when it comes down to a final weekend where you've got derby games, and even when Team 2 is playing Team 13, like we have in Durban, and there's a lot on that game for both sides, yeah, it's good to see. It means the competition is healthy.
Yeah. I mean, nobody's traveling across continents. Yeah. Before the quarterfinal, so that's at least the teams that are hosting, that's what I'm getting at here. And then the game in Cape Town is one that has a different kind of spice, because the Lions have an outside chance of performing a miracle. I mean, it's not impossible, but it's it'll require a tall order. And the way I see it, they'll probably need to get a bonus point in Cape Town to try and sort of smooth their path into the quarterfinals.
Yeah, they're definitely going to need a bonus point, and then they're going to have to hope. The Sharks victory in the Challenge Cup has obviously meant that there's only 7 qualifying spots left for the Champions Cup next season. So if that's your aim, you're the Lions, you're going to have to hope that best result would be Edinburgh and Benetton drawing their game.
But what if the Lions prefer to take the low road by sneaking into the finals of the UFC and then go on? Been away from a final, been away from in the final, then spot in the not impossible. What do you
think? No, it's not impossible. It isn't impossible, but I mean it's improbable. Let's be honest.
No, I think they need to get into the mix.
Yeah, and that's the thing. One of Edinburgh and Benetton, whoever wins, they're going to probably qualify, secure the qualification. The big game is obviously Ulster Munster, which we'll see who comes out on top there. Ulster now suddenly have to try and finish 7th because they could have snuck in 8th. So they've got something to play for. And they're coming off a win over Leinster. So there's a bit of spice, but they're playing away from home in Limerick. So it's going to be tough for them. And Munster at this stage of the season, I don't know. You just see that sort of champion side sort of glint in their eye. They look like a side that's not going to back down. So I think it's a bit of a long shot for the Lions, but it can happen.
I think what Ulster will need to do is just at least get a bonus point, because that puts them on 54, which means the Lions will have to win. They will have to get a bonus point against the Stormers, but that won't be enough because Ulster would still have won one match more if the Lions were to win in Cape Town. But it's also a scenario that is not unlikely. So with Edinburgh and Benetton, both 9 lines, I see that as a tight contest. And you may very well have a situation where those teams have to settle for a draw.
Well, I think that would be the best result for everybody. Part of me, it's sort of, obviously, you and I cover different teams. I cover Bulls and Lions. So from a Lions point of view, I want Ulster to lose to Munster and the Lions to sneak in. But from a Bulls point of view, you'd want Ulster to win. And that wouldn't be good enough for the Lions, though. But so the Bulls.
Okay, let's have a draw there as well. I mean, but that's not enough for the Lions.
No, it's not good enough either. So that's the problem. So I don't know. I think we're going to be watching with calculators and things like that. The Lions have got a very good points difference, but that unfortunately only works if it first goes on wins, and that's their biggest problem. They've won less than the teams above them.
Yeah, well, there is a path for the Lions and for the Bulls. Bulls win by bonus point in Durban. Munster only get a win. They then level on log points, but then the Bulls have a better points difference.
Yeah,
they have the same number difference. In fact, the Bulls will have they'll have the same number of wins as well, but the Bulls have a better points difference. So.
Yeah. I don't know. Look, I mean, it's going to be one of those where we're going to be watching sort of and having updating the log the whole time. There is definitely a path. Of course, the Stormers can only finish seventh if they lose. That's the lowest they can finish. So they qualified for the Champions Cup. So they don't mind. But they haven't lost at home to a team since the Lions. I think it was on the 2nd or 3rd of December 2023.
It was in December, Yeah.
It's almost 2 years that they haven't lost it, to a year and a half. And they're not going to give up that record very easily. So I think we're going to see a high-scoring game there.
But they could also take the view they will have to travel one way or the other in the quarterfinal. So they might opt to keep their powder dry and sort of, I don't know. Because they can't advance themselves from fifth to fourth. That's out of their reach.
Yeah. Well, so, I mean, then you got to ask yourself.
Tactically interesting.
Yeah, because you got to ask yourself, who's your preferred opponent then? Because, you sort of think to yourself, do they want to go to Loftus and hope the Bulls finish second, and then they lose their game and finish seventh, and then they go to Loftus? Which is better for them, to travel to Loftus or to travel, Limerick or Dublin or Glasgow?
It would have to be Loftus.
Unfortunately, it's not a scenario I want to see, because I want to see, obviously, our team go as far as possible. And, another Bulls Stormers quarterfinal is not something we really want. We want teams to rather meet in semis or final. So, I can see that sort of argument being some people's preference.
Yeah. Look, I mean, it's Limerick is in the making there. That's one of the possibilities. There's Loftus. Dublin?
Well, it could. I mean, I'm just weird. They can't finish higher than fifth, so they're going to have to.
Yeah.
So they're going to play one of the teams above them. So, and that's Dublin or Glasgow. Yeah. So where they're going to be.
Right, Brendan. So let's have a look at the other games on this weekend. Let's call some of them tasty this time, because you've got Leinster Connor on Friday night. Do you see that panning up?
Well, I mean, I think the backlash from Leinster is going to be interesting to watch, because they're going to be hurting big time. I think we should let you just listen to Jacques Nienaber's comments as well.
Sorry to interrupt you. Didn't we say this last year?
And the year before, wasn't it? No, we shouldn't be happy about other people's pain. No,
I'm not suggesting
we love them for their consistency.
Glasgow Warriors, Zebrin.
Before we go there. 5-point
performance there for Franco Smith.
Before we go to Glasgow, let's just put a bit of perspective. It's one thing us laughing a bit about Leinster's pain, but let's listen to Jacques Nienaber and just what he said, whether it will leave a scar on them in terms of the URC campaign. Here's Jacques chatting about it.
Yeah, it's not in our hands. Yeah, 100%. So, for us, I think the big thing this week is literally focusing on us making sure that, yeah, that, I mean, and I say that with all the respect to Connect and our position. I mean, obviously, you have to have a good understanding of how they operate and how they work. But I think the main thing for us is just to make sure that we do as much as we can, and then we literally have to sit back and see how things play out. I think that we definitely we will have a home quarterfinal. It's just then do we have a home semi or but that will depend, like you rightly say, on other results. I don't know, because I wasn't part of the others. I'm only part of this one, and I think the main thing is probably to although there will always be emotions involved, I think the main thing is to try and detach emotion as much as possible and look as objective to the game as possible, you know, and try and get emotions out of the way. And like I said in the first question that I got asked, I think if you take all the emotions out of the way, there was three areas that we probably didn't tick the box. And the first and most important one is, did you win the game? No, we didn't. Then second of all, did we have good discipline with ball in hand? No, we conceded too many turnovers. And thirdly, did we have good continuity on attack? And when I talk about continuity, I talk about our breakdown and making sure that we get good quick rucks. No, we didn't do that. And that's the objective side of things, you know. So if you want to bar that, I think defensively there was good parity between the two teams. I thought if you look at our attack in general and how we carried ball, getting over the advantage line, creating line breaks, creating front football, meters per carry. If you look at that statistics, probably we were good in that department. If you look at the set piece and you look at our attacking scrums, getting penalties out of it, that's probably another. So I think one must try, long story, long answer for a short point. I think one must look as objective as possible to it. And like I said, if you look at that, I can't say if there's a mental block. In my mind, no. Why would there be? You lost the game. Yes, it's a final. But it's like any game that you lose. You've got to try and cut the emotions of it and look at it from an objective point of view and find solutions. No, for me it's easy. I just look objectively at it. You know, there will be a lot of white noise, and there will be a lot of talk around it. But the main thing is you've got to stay in the reality. You know, there will be a lot of, like I said, a lot of white noise and a lot of talk, and you should have done that, should have done this. But at the end of the day, you've got to cut all that white noise off. Look at the game in the barest of way that you can, and look at it as objectively as you can, and then you must say, okay, listen, what was good, what was bad, and what do we need to fix? And it's literally as emotionless as that. Yeah, no, definitely, especially looking at the URC, and we're fortunate that We missed out on we played in a final of one competition and obviously couldn't get it over the line, but we are fortunate that we still have another competition and a trophy to go for, you know. So it's moving on to the next. We've got 4 big weeks left, and we must make sure. I mean, if you go into the knockouts of this other competition, or the URC competition in the quarters, the semis and the finals. If you go into knockout rugby, you always want to go in preferably with momentum. And that's why it will be awesome for us if we can build momentum going into those knockouts. So it's important for us to turn the corner as quickly as possible and go with momentum into the next game, into the knockout.
Okay, Jacques, I might just ask one question for Leinster TV, if you don't mind. It's our last game in the RDS before the redevelopment. Since you've come in December, how have you found the atmosphere and the Leinster support?
Now, yes, the Leinster support has been phenomenal. I mean, that's probably the thing that hurts. If I say we look at it unemotionally as possible, the game on Saturday, I mean, that's the emotional part. that probably hurts the most is the loyalty of the fan and the effort that the fan goes through, and that we couldn't enlighten their weekend and enlighten their year, you know, and make them happy. I think that's the emotional part. That's the part that probably eats you alive inside and will eat you alive for some time. But from a clinical rugby point of view, get clarity, no emotion. This is what we need to fix. Let's move on. But the fact that you drop the fans and you couldn't give them some happiness, you know, is the thing that will probably eat you alive, especially the fan base that we have and how loyal they are and how much they support us through thick and thin. So yeah, that's the tough part. So, and that's why it's important for us this weekend. That's why what I meant when I said it's about us. We've got a couple of players that are finishing up with Leinster, it will be, and we're obviously finishing off with RDS for a while. So it's important for us to make sure that we finish on a high in terms of that. So there's a lot for us from an emotional point of view to play for this weekend.
You're with Brendan Nell and Liam Delcom on the To The Last Drop podcast.
Always good to hear from Jacques. Glasgow Warriors against Zebre Parma. I just see 5 points here for one team. What do you see?
If there was more than 5 points to get, I'd see more than 5 points there. The only interesting thing would be to see if Franco's son, Franco Jr., who plays for Zebre Parma, actually makes a starting lineup. Otherwise, there's not much you can say about that game, other than there might be a family reunion afterwards.
Yeah, look, I mean, you want, for the want them to get back onto the walls, because after their visits to South Africa, they would have been hurting. So a good solid performance at home will certainly, get the fans back on board again.
Yeah. And then now for the big calls. Now we're getting to the big calls there. Stormers, Lions. Come on, give us your call.
I'm still going to go Stormers, not by much, but I think the Lions will give them a big scare. I just feel that the Stormers, even if they off their game, they find ways of getting themselves out of trouble, and they have the composure to do that and key plays and key areas to do that. So I'm still going to go Stormers, but not by much.
Yeah, this is one of those that inevitably, whatever prediction you make, you can easily be wrong. And so, I mean, I think it's a very close game. I think the Stormers do have the advantage of home ground and should be favourites for the game. But I'm going to go with my heart a bit and say a lovely JC Pretorius try to win the game, get a bonus point, and give the Lions a chance. Although I don't think things are going to play out their way late in the evening.
Mm. Now I'm suddenly reminded of the Cats going to Cape Town way back in about 1999 under Lottie Mains.
Russell Rasmus is
there. And then in the last league match, toppled the Stormers, who then had a semi-final against the Highlanders the following week. And yes, the Cats battered them on that occasion in a low scoring game. I'm not suggesting for a moment that the Lions will do the same, but it certainly has the makings of them potentially just knocking the Stormers out of their stride.
You mentioned the Cats. Wasn't that the Men in Black years of the Stormers? Didn't they have a bit of a player strike
before the Highlanders? I think that started. Yeah. I think there were also a couple of big collisions in that game, if I recall.
No. Those days of the ugly jerseys of Super Rugby.
That 1998 jersey, oh my word, yeah. Let's move on.
Yeah, Benetton, Edinburgh. As you say, close game. I'm gonna go for Benetton on this one then.
A draw?
A draw would be, we want a draw. I think for once in our lives, we're calling it a draw. So a game that no one's going to care about, Scarlet's Dragons.
I'm gonna, yeah, sorry to, before we move on, I mean, I will happily have equal amounts of haggis and pasta on my plate for that one. So let's move on.
Yeah, Scarlet Dragons is not a game I think either of us really worry about who wins, but whoever does win, it will be good for their final game of the season.
Yeah, you'd probably have to say Scarlet, yeah?
Yeah, and this is part of the Judgment Day games, the doubleheader at Cardiff. So that's hopefully they get a good crowd and it's a good day of rugby for the Welsh teams because they've had a tough year, so a tough season.
And it's Cardiff City Stadium, not the principality, we need to point out.
No. Then, of course, the big one in Durban. I'm going to go for the Bulls. I just think even though the Sharks did win the trophy and were so good against Gloucester, I think the Bulls are on song at the moment and are probably a bit more determined. I don't think it's going to be a pretty game in any sense, but I'm not sure if the Bulls will get a bonus point. But I think they will win. I think the Sharks have probably achieved what they want to achieve this season, and that difference in attitude might just be the difference in the game.
I totally agree with you. The Bulls have a bit more riding on this. And when it comes to winning tight contests, I suppose the team with a stumble on the day will prevail, and I think the Bulls have that box to tick.
The one I'm hoping for an upset for, from a Bulls point of view, Munster Ulster. I'd hope Ulster do, but chances are, if I had to go with my heart, if I had to put money on it, I'd put it on for a Munster win at home.
Yeah. For me, that game is all about whether Ulster get something out of it. So Munster win probably by 8-9 points. So I think Ulster will get close to potentially getting a bonus point, but I don't see them winning.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see, just from that point of view, from Ulster and Bennett and Edinburgh, that if the Lions don't make sneak in, just who sort of gets a seventh and eighth spot then, who misses out on European qualification. Already you're looking at a point where no Welsh teams are going to be in the Champions Cup. So, they've got very little to look forward to in terms of that. They've just got Challenge Cup next year. And that brings us to the last game, which is Cardiff Ospreys, which is probably the two best Welsh teams of the season. And probably just more, for the Shield rights, that'll be the only thing really on the line for them.
The Ospreys have been impressive in parts of the season, so I'd expect them to get up for this game. So, for me, Ospreys and possibly we're in an outside bonus point range.
I don't know. I think this is going to be a close game. I think more to meet. I think Cardiff probably that win in Durban, it'll depend what that did for them. They've had a tough season, so they've lost a lot of games by 4 or 5 points. So, if that win in Durban has sort of inspired them, they might be able to sneak a result, but probably if I had to put money on it, would be the Ospreys as well.
It's a nice full roster and a lot to look forward to before the quarterfinals. And I think post ride today. I think it's going to take us through a full range of emotions. So there's a lot to look forward to.
Yeah, there is. And we'll definitely be keeping our calculators close, the permutations, and we'll have a lot to discuss next week when we know who's playing in the quarterfinals and who's in the Champions Cup. But that's it for us this week. This has been To The Last Drop. We've really enjoyed it, and the season's getting towards a climax. Join us again next week, and thank you for listening. Cheers, Liam.
Thanks for listening. And a reminder, you can find all the To The Last Drop podcasts on the Brendan Nell YouTube channel, iono.fm, Spotify, player.fm, Pocket Casts, Google Podcasts, and iTunes, or wherever you find your favorite podcasts.